TNT Radio wants you to get on our soapbox because your opinion matters. Tell us what you really think at tntradio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox, lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Perspective with Jesse Zurawell on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Back with me today is Wayne Cunnington. Wayne, like I was injured by one of the COVID-19 injections. And since his injury, he's been speaking out about his personal experience and the similar experiences of others. And he's been doing so lately on his Substack, which you can find at waynecunnington.substack.com. It's always a pleasure to speak with Wayne, so I'm glad to have him return to the program today. Wayne, welcome back.
Welcome, Jesse. Nice to be on. Thank you.
Absolutely. So last time we spoke, we talked about the rally that was going to be held and was held this past Saturday in London outside of the BBC's headquarters. And it was a rally for and to draw attention to those injured by the COVID-19 injections. And you attended the rally and wrote about this on your Substack a few days ago. But I wanted to get you on to hear from you firsthand about that experience. So what was it like?
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was amazing. I met a couple of friends there, as I kind of wrote in the story, but it was just very strange because you couldn't hear any noise and you're only like a street away, and then you turn the corner and then there's this mobile stage unit right in front of the BBC studios, which unfortunately was all covered up with scaffolding, you know, which you kind of think must have been quite tactical because they knew the thing that was going to be held that day. So, you know, they're trying to protect themselves even by not reporting, but also not letting you capture the studios, be caught in the images that would obviously go worldwide, you know, and they had them. But yeah, it was amazing because thousands of people either caught up in the whole thing by their family being affected or friends or just wanted to be there for the day and show their support. A lot of guest speakers, a lot of emotional stories told by the people affected by their injuries or bereaved even. It was a very emotional day. I mean, the people around me, just for an example, were crying as much as I would. It was very, very somber, but also very powerful because of stirring speeches, because there's a lot of changes that we need to keep pushing. We can't back down. We have to make this narrative collapse, and it'll only happen through pure pressure by those in charge, whether it's in the MPs, you know, you've got contact with all MPs around the country. And just by putting that pressure on them, hopefully just weight of numbers will, you know, will bring it down further.
I should revise what I just said about this being a rally to highlight those injured by the injections. Also, it was a rally to highlight those who've been killed by these injections. We can't forget that these are both toxic and lethal injections. And would you say the point of the whole gathering was to, or at least one of the main points of the whole gathering was to mass as many people as possible who've been directly or indirectly affected by these injections, whether through injury or death, and show in public whether the BBC was watching or not, how many people, of course it can't account for everybody, but give an example, a sample size of how many people have been either directly or indirectly affected and severely so by these injections.
Yeah, I mean, it was easily several thousand people. I mean, the photos that I took, you know, give you a very good example, a very good idea. I mean, I've posted them on various social media apps. I've left the photo accounts open purely so it could be shared and spread that much more easily. And there's several people doing the same, because obviously the BBC chose not to cover it. They didn't even choose to highlight it as an anti-vaxxer event, as they have done previously, when they've actually mentioned some sort of a protest, but not really in great details. But just the fact that they mention it shows to people that there is something else happening to the narrative. So, yeah, you're right. There were people who died. There's many thousands of people who have died in all countries. And there was one lovely lady, she was mourning her son who died. He was the first person in the UK to have died in January 2021. Her name was Anne Wright, and she lost her son, Stephen Wright. He was the doctor, a 32-year-old, and obviously perfectly well beforehand, and then a week later, after having his vaccine, he was gone, sadly. And that was very, very hard to listen to, but these stories do need to be heard, and so many people obviously were taking that in. And over on the big screen, it's so much more powerful put across. So,
So obviously, people who've been directly or indirectly affected spoke. Were there other speakers as well? Any, I suppose you could call them activist speakers, and I'm using that term very broadly.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, because we're all activists in a way, aren't we? Because we're all trying to make a difference, and we all then become so much more in tune with the cause, and we put all our efforts into it. And so we want to make a difference. Yeah. I mean, okay, aside from the people that were injured, because, you know, we had a lady from America, Kat Parker. She was head of one of the vaccine injured groups on social media. And so it was quite nice for her, because she's actually quite badly injured herself. But she was also a part of that group that then tries to drive awareness. So her alone was a nice link to other countries that have been affected. We had Robert Malone, doctor, on a link. He'd actually recorded a segment especially for the day. Matt Letizier, ex-footballer, and he's been quite well known on his Getter page to support those who've been injured, and obviously received quite a lot of flack for it, and lost his position on Sky News, Sky Sports, actually reporting, you know, on the games. But it's the media don't like you speaking out, so he was sadly pushed away. We also had Mark Sharman. He actually produced a video, a documentary on those injured called Safe and Effective. And it's been shown at various places around the UK since the end of last year, and it's actually done very well. And I think after about a million views, they were removed it from YouTube, because obviously it's damaging to the narrative. Yeah, that's right.
You can find it on Odyssey. That's where I watched it.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. They're advertising on there. There's also a other one as well, which they're pushing on the advertising, but I can't think offhand what that was. He came on with an English actor called John Bowe, who, again, like many who've been sidelined for speaking out very early on, he attended many of the London protests for, you know, anti-mandate, anti-lockdowns. And, of course, he soon found himself losing work through trying to do the right thing. So he never has to say a lot, just the fact that he's there. And because he runs a help group for those who have been vaccine injured. I suppose quite late to the cause, because he'd been trying to do something, but obviously it takes a lot of money, a lot of funding, who he had to privately source through charity funding. And basically anyone who then has been injured needs help. What can they then do? They then get guided through various other helps groups called like UKCV Family, and they then help to put them into the right sort of, right, this is what you can do, this is what you need to do. You know, it's just somewhere to actually go to so you don't feel alone, because the worst thing is when you are in that position, you're just basically left alone by your health departments, your governments. People just don't want to know, and so you are left alone. And some people are then sadly forced to take those sad decisions. Dr. Christian Buckland was another nice choice, because I met him through UK Column and a few other places. I've spoken to him at a recent event last year, and he was actually in the documentary as well, Safe and Effective by Mark Sharman. And he tries to help those who've been injured, obviously using psychiatry tools, you know, actually changing the way your mind thinks to actually better handle your condition now. And it's been quite invaluable. It really has. The group actually, UKCV Family actually have him on, trying to do live Zoom links just to actually, as an added bonus, you know, because sometimes you feel like you need help, but you don't really know how to do it, or it's like a group session, so you don't actually feel the pressure so much. Apart from that, I mean, that was pretty much it. There was a lady called Fiona, and she actually puts these events on, because there's a number of these Truth Be Told events happening all around the country. There's another one in Manchester, I think, on the 31st of this month. She actually is quite a good driver for these events. And obviously she works with so many other people to actually put them on, because it would take a lot of work, a lot of arrangement, and people giving up their time for free. It's quite an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. What's Fiona's last name?
I just got in touch.
If you don't know it, that's okay. I'm just asking because I believe she recently. Okay, I don't know if it was her, but I believe somebody, either her or somebody affiliated with the work she does, recently spoke to the group Medical Doctors for COVID Ethics. There's Doctors for COVID Ethics, okay, and there's Medical Doctors for COVID Ethics, which is spearheaded essentially by Charles Covis and Dr. Stephen Frost in Wales, I believe. And you can find their program on Rumble. I think every Sunday and Tuesday they have a guest on, and they cover just about everything they've can. So they've had people on like Dr. Mark Bailey, for example, who is in the camp I would put myself in, the no virus camp. But they've also had people on like Steve Kirsch, who's, I suppose you could say, at the other end of the spectrum, if you want to put it that way. So I believe, again, Fiona or one of her associates or colleagues recently spoke to that panel. I need to double check that, but just to point out that if it is indeed her or one of her colleagues, it's getting reach, and it speaks, I think, to the fact that this movement for awareness is growing, and it's good to know that there are future events planned, that it's not a one and done, because obviously I don't need to tell you, this needs to keep going. We need to bring as much awareness as possible everywhere we possibly can, which is why I'm speaking to you now. One of the reasons I'm speaking to you now, so that people who might not know that organic movements, in lieu of governments and associated bodies not caring at all about what's happened to people, in lieu of that, that people are organically taking this into their own hands and saying, we're not going to sit silently by while we or people we know suffer and die from these injections we were told were for not just our own good, but the good of humanity. And I think you and I can see now how foolish it was to believe that, to think that, and act on it. And some people certainly knew that and knew to stay away from these injections completely. And I wish I were one of them, but unfortunately, I wish we were all one of them. But unfortunately, some of us, just speaking for myself, went into it unthinkingly. I can only speak for myself, and didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't do my due diligence. I didn't research, and not to make excuses, but I was coming out of a very bad period in terms of alcoholism and substance abuse. So my mind wasn't all there, but I make no excuses for myself. I'm still responsible for the decisions I make. And I made that decision, unfortunately, and I will always regret that decision, but that's why I do the work. One of the reasons I do the work I do now is so that in my own way, I can, if not, I certainly can't fix the choice I made, but in terms of redeeming myself or reconciling with myself, and also helping others to see the dangers of not just these injections, but the agenda that's behind them, how this agenda is targeting all of humanity, whether somebody's taken one of these injections or not, I feel like it's my, I hate to use the word mission because it sounds so messianic, but for lack of a better word, I feel like it's my responsibility to do so. And I have no problem with that, because I think that when you look at the big picture, we're talking about a fight for the future of humanity, or no future for humanity. So there's nothing more important, I would say.
That's right. I mean, it's like you say. I mean, around about the same time, probably yourself, you know, I hadn't seen all the reports, all the things going on. But obviously in 2021, when I was trying to recuperate after the injury. I then became aware of certain things and certain protests, the things that had already been happening in 2020 during lockdown. I mean, during the protests, briefly going back to that, Fiona, that the organisers put on these clips from 2020 protests because they could see something was coming, but they didn't know what. And obviously they were protesting against the police and they were using a lot of footage, but some of the clips, they were in London. She was actually arrested by the police. But it was just so ridiculous because the police have got these masks on and obviously all the protesters hadn't. And they were just waving these batons at them. I mean, it was just so crazy. I mean, any sane person would look at that and think, what on earth? If it's, something's that dangerous, why aren't the people, you know, more scared? But obviously they knew something was going on. But of course, you and I, we both know our personal stories, and we were just blind to it because of things going on around us. I mean, in my case, it was my mother who just died, and then my father was ill. And of course, with working and just seeing a narrative on the TV and the papers, you kind of got hooked into it. I did. But you're right to say that maybe mission's a bit strange to say, but it's the only thing that we feel can make up for what we've done to ourselves. But we're using that fight we've got left to then make sure nobody else gets sucked into it. Because at the end of the day, if we don't speak out, we don't keep pushing back, who's going to be left?
Right, right. And it's, again, there were certainly people who saw the writing on the wall early on. And I want to give them credit because a lot of those voices, if not all of them, were severely marginalized, to say the least, very early on. People had their careers upended, their lives upended, and in hindsight, they did a very brave, very truth-oriented, very, very important, maybe the most important thing given what we know now about this agenda. But for everybody who didn't see the writing on the wall early, people like us, who've since woken up, I don't like using that term either, but for lack of a better term, who've since woken up and are doing their respective work to call out what's been done and try to do whatever they can to prevent future harm and future death. I think it's just as laudable. I think the worst position you could be in right now is to, whether you've taken an injection or not, is to just be ignorant, either willfully so, or you're just ignorant for whatever reason of what's going on, to not see this huge picture playing out, this huge transition playing out, transformation. I'm using the language of the globalists, of course, but to not see that and to think that life is still as it was pre-2020 and this is all going to blow over, I think I feel bad for people like that in a way. Some of them are very vitriolic and it's hard to feel bad for them, but to either not see what's coming or know what's coming and not care or just not care at all, it's hard to imagine in this day and age that there are people out there with that orientation, but there are. And what gives me sustenance is that it seems like that number of people is reducing based on who I talk to on this program, but also people I talk to in my everyday life. And I hope that when this scam, when they try to pull this scam again in a big way, the pandemic, quote unquote, scam, because I think they are going to try to do it again. My hope is that most people are going to not just see through the bullshit, but say no to it in every way, and just say no, act in accordance with saying no. So a long-winded way of saying that the ranks have swelled from those who saw the writing on the wall early, and I think the ranks are continuing to swell, but whether or not we have critical mass remains to be seen. I try to remain hopeful, but it's I suppose impossible to know until the hammer comes down. Just getting back to Fiona real quick, I looked up the segment I mentioned on Medical Doctors for COVID Ethics. Is her last name Hine, H-I-N-E?
Well, I think it's her middle name, I think. No.
And is she... Okay. So Fiona Hine, founder of CoviLeaks.
Oh, sorry, recently. In brackets. So maybe that's a... pre-marriage name, possibly.
Okay.
I don't even know if Rose Diamond might not even be a real name. Might just be a something that's just been
okay. Well, in
with her, possibly.
In any case, Medical Doctors for COVID Ethics is a great resource, and I'll have to figure out if this is indeed the same Fiona. If it is, she gave a presentation 2 weeks ago to that panel. So again, I highly recommend checking that panel out. Lots to learn. Let's take a quick break.
I think it is her.
What?
Sure.
Okay. I believe it is, because UK Column did a segment with her, and it's the woman I'm looking at right now, and she was on UK Column to talk about the rally that just occurred on Saturday. So
sure.
I'm 99% sure it's the same woman. And she gave about a 2.5 hour presentation. Usually they do a presentation and then a Q&A on this panel. So I haven't watched it yet, but it's in my queue. So that's out there for anybody who's interested. Again, you can find that on Rumble. If you look up Charles Covis, who I want to say is part of the TNT team, although I haven't looked at the most recent roster, so he might not be anymore. He certainly was for a while. His last name is spelled K-O-V-E-S-S. If you search Charles Covis on Rumble, his channel will come up, and you can find the panel presentations, which have been happening for a long time. Again, a very good resource. Let's take a quick break, and we will continue with this conversation afterwards. So everybody hang tight, and I will return momentarily with Wayne Cunnington here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
Here's what you really need to know about the original Nuremberg Code. It states that anything being used under experimental use must be stopped if there is a clear indication of any harm or death. Okay, that's one of the principles that was brought in the first place. So, by definition, this is being broken and ran over by the current regimes on the planet at the minute. People are being maimed. People are being killed. Children are being stillborn as a result of these experimental drugs. So the Nuremberg Code itself states this vaccine rollout should be stopped, but it's not. So if they can't keep to the principles of Nuremberg 1, you really think they're going to have a Nuremberg 2? And while the current administration is sitting, wake up. It's not going to happen. Forget Nuremberg 2. Try keeping the Nuremberg 1. Try keeping to the core principles that were brought out as a result of Nuremberg 1. If you can't do that, don't talk about Nuremberg 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. It's like me talking to Darren Eilish here. What are we going to talk about in June this year? I have no idea, Darren. I haven't got a clue what's coming down the line. We'll have to focus on January. Is that not a first statement? So forget about Nuremberg 2 while they're still abusing and decimating Nuremberg 1.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
Yeah, there's something for you at the Men's Shed.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I'm Jesse Zerwell, and I'm speaking to Wayne Cunnington, whose writings you can find at waynecunnington.substack.com. Wayne, you mentioned that Robert Malone appeared via video for an address with an address he prepared for the event. I'm curious what he said. What was the content of his address?
So anybody who's listened to Robert before, he'll always discuss his past history with creating what was originally the mRNA vaccine, but was then later butchered by Pfizer. But he was only really there to say, as a means of support, because you're there at the BBC, we need to, you know, raise our voices. But highlighting the fact that he'd been shouting out since 2020 that these vaccines were going to be harmful because they could see it then. But sadly, nobody listened to it. Obviously, he raised his voices and has been speaking out ever since. But he did actually go on to have two vaccines, I think he did. I'm sure he said in a interview somewhere. So... Maybe he got hooked into the fear factor as well. I don't know. I just thought that quite an interesting point. But there was a lot of people there. Obviously took his words in as very inspirational. But I did actually forget to mention that they probably the most, apart from Matt Letizia, was the most influential of his man of the moment, Andrew Bridge, an MP. He was speaking out so much in the House of Commons, and obviously he got suspended, which we mentioned last time. But he's actually driving it forward still. He's just launched a petition to get the excess deaths made more aware, more of a focus. Because Esther McVeigh, MP, she spoke in the House of Commons this week and asked the very question, obviously when Rishi wasn't there, and they did actually acknowledge that there are excess deaths. There are excess deaths in every country. And they tried to say that there have been excess deaths for COVID and numerous other things. But at the end of the day, there's still a huge amount of deaths that they have no possible answer for. We know that there have been huge amounts of deaths and injuries from these vaccines. But he's now pushing for this petition to actually highlight it better. And I've noticed that today, and there's about 6,500 people. So it needs to get up to 10,000 minimum for the government to take it seriously. I've been reposting that on social media. So hopefully, next few days, that can actually get somewhere, because the petition led inquiries do actually get taken seriously. I've seen one televised for the vaccine injury last year. That was after the following week from the Portcullis House of Commons inquiry I went to. Also, there were people who did speak out, Andrew Bridgen, Christopher Chope, and the other colleague who's on the All Parties group. But you do get a lot of other party members supporting the vaccine still, and that's the problem. They've got deep ties to pharma, so that's the thing we need to get through. You know, if we can't break those ties, then we're just going to be banging on a tin drum and nobody's going to be hearing it.
Right. Where can people find the petition that Andrew Bridgen has going around if they're interested in signing it, or if they just want to take a look at it?
Yeah. I posted it to Getter a couple of hours ago, so it's on there for people to actually just glance over. So hopefully, we don't have huge followings, but anything that we can do to make a difference, we feel in our eyes, is worth doing, isn't it? So, yeah, it's other social medias as well, and a few people have shared it as well, too. So hopefully it can gain some traction.
And what exactly is he calling for on the petition for there to be a serious investigation into the excess deaths in the UK, which I have to say are astounding? We're talking about thousands of people each week.
That's right. So you're looking at, I think it's over 1,000 a week in the UK alone. I'm not too sure in America, but it's got to be at least several thousand. I did see there was a Daily Mail story today in the US that you're looking at over 300,000 excess deaths since 2020. I mean, that's alarming. That's excess deaths. That's not just the normal sort of ones that they look at for heart attacks or strokes or anything else. These are the ones that they can't easily explain away. So this is quite an interesting thing that Bridgen's going to do. Well, he has done, obviously. It's up for people then to actually take more notice of it. It's formally asking the government to undertake an investigation into it. So, I mean, Esther McMay already raised it to the government, so that's one thing. And they have answered during live sessions. So they're aware of it, but they're just not taking action. That's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's bizarre is the least of it. It's astounding to be able to go to the ONS, for example, and find these numbers. Anybody can do it, right? They're being reported primarily by independent media. UK Column does a very good job of highlighting these numbers frequently. But any of us can go to the ONS website and find these numbers. You put that together with people either dropping dead or having other sorts of events live on television, or if they're not live on television, they're picked up, and we've seen plenty of videos of people either dropping dead or having heart attacks or having some sort of event. And then you look at the pharmacovigilance data, whether it's the yellow card scheme or VAERS or Eudra Vigilance, take your pick. And all of these, you take all of this pointing to a genocidal level of death, and it's life is just going on for the most part as if nothing's happening. And it's astounding. It's an astounding thing to behold. And I'm far from the only one who feels that way or notices that, but I think of this every time the ONS statistics come up, because again, we're talking about thousands of people each week, and this has been going on for some time. It's, as I've said before, it's, I would say, unbelievable, but nothing to me is unbelievable anymore.
Seems to be the new normal, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's certainly a way to put it. So hopefully that gets taken up by the government, but I certainly don't have any hopes for them. And that's something that occurred to me when I watched Matt Letizia's speech, which I thought was very good, but toward the end of it, he talked about, he made an appeal of sorts to Rishi Sunak to basically take this, what's happening, seriously, to pay attention, to give a voice to the voiceless, etc. And I don't know if he believes that Rishi Sunak is suddenly going to have a change of heart and care, but there's no way that's going to happen. These people don't care. They never cared. And I feel as though appealing to government or helping or hoping that government is going to turn over a new leaf is futile, but I'm curious how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, they can't plead to their humanity, to their feelings, their thoughts, emotions, because they truly have none. They have this greed, this insane lust for money. I mean, Rishi has deep pockets with the pharmaceutical company anyway. His family is, well, actually owns one. I think they're based in Ukraine still. That's quite bizarre, isn't it? But I know Bridgen, he asked the vaccines minister in the Commons yesterday, basically when they want to release all this data, this information about deaths and injuries, and when they're going to make it publicly available. But they just try to push it to one side. They're not really interested in this because they want to protect the sales, the image that they're portraying. You know, they're trying to push vaccines wherever you look still. I mean, in America, I saw a Pfizer commercial. There was Martha Stewart pushing vaccines. They're saying that they're totally safe and effective. Well, we know they're not safe and effective. But they have to keep saying it because then they wouldn't be able to sell a product, would they?
No. And the UK is now probably more deeply in bed with the pharmaceutical or the biotech industrial complex than it's ever been. So I'm talking about here the collaboration the recent collaboration the government entered into with Moderna, wherein Moderna is going to build a huge manufacturing and R&D hub in the UK. And reading here from fiercepharma.com, which, if anybody isn't aware, it's a very good resource for what's going on in the biotech or pharmaceutical, if you wish to call it that, industry. I would say it's long since been taken over by biotech, but it's not as if pharmaceutical is a much more generous term. But Fierce Pharma, good resource. It reported yesterday that the UK government wouldn't disclose financial details of its massive mRNA collaboration with Moderna. The deal, worth £1 billion, is aimed at building Britain's mRNA capabilities, including R&D and vaccine manufacturing. But how that money will be spent is less clear. So the UK, again, has a huge investment in this industry. And this industry, in parallel with the transformation, again, to use the globalist language, that we see happening geopolitically, that we see happening with the international monetary and financial system, there's a transformation going on within the biotech industry that is going all in with mRNA, and they have no intention, these entities like Moderna, Pfizer, BioNTech, of backing down. And because they're in bed with the government in a public-private partnership, the government has no intention of backing down either. The government's going to stick with this. It's not going to change its tune. It might offer concessions, or what seem like concessions on the surface, but it's not going to change its tune. So perhaps it's cynical, but I think appealing to the better angels of government is futile.
That's right.
And I should add that a big part of this pivot toward mRNA has to do with the fact that the traditional vaccines, quote unquote, are not as profitable anymore. They've actually become a money losing enterprise. And that has to do with the time it takes for R&D, the time it takes for clinical trials. And so the narrative goes that with mRNA, so-called vaccines can be developed very quickly and deployed very quickly, and there's no need for trials because it's based on a programmable template, essentially, which is all insane. It's a narrative. It's a sales narrative. It's a transhumanist narrative. It's absolutely insane, but that's what the biotech industry has largely pivoted toward now. And the governments are going along with it, as we see here with the UK government. And so I want efforts like Andrew Bridgen's to get traction, but looking at it soberly, I don't think they will, but I would love to be proven wrong.
The thing is, you have to keep trying. You know, this even Dr. Lathim Malhotra, who got the seal of approval from the GNC Council. You know, they basically said they're no longer taking further action against him, because as soon as he started speaking out, they were trying to bring his license to, you know, do his position, his job, into question. But now they're going to take action. Well, that's kind of a positive. So all it needs now is a few more brave and hardy souls to actually get onto these TV programs like he did on the BBC recently and actually just speak some truths. It's going to take a lot more people to put their necks on the line. But at the end of the day, if Bridgen's prepared to do it and put his job on the line, why can't somebody else? You know, you share the toll. Christopher Chobe's done it. And there's at least three that I know of. I can't think of this other guy's name, but he was at all the other inquiries I've seen. It's a brave action, but it's a worthy one, because it shows you've got integrity. You're prepared to fight, you know, in the face of all these things changing. I mean, look at what you were saying there about how long it takes to put these vaccines on market. Well, they're thinking about doing away with that in future. They were talking that they won't have to actually do these long programs of trials and tests and just put it straight on the market, because the new pandemic,
which is essentially what they've already done this time around.
That's right. But it would be even worse next time, because you wouldn't even have those basic requirements. They can just put anything out as an urgent pandemic requirement, which is what the WHO are trying to get countries to sign up by December this year, aren't they? That's their new edict, that all countries have to sign up to this agreement, that whatever rule that they put forward, you've got to immediately sign up for. So whether that's immediate lockdowns, being forced to take these vaccines to curb a dangerous virus, that won't be a choice. That will be the edict.
Yes, yes. And I'm glad you bring that up, because it's easy to look at what Moderna and the UK government are doing, for example, and say, well, they can make these all they want. Most people now know how lethal, how toxic and lethal these are, and want nothing to do with them. We've been around the block once. We're not going around again. Mm. So what are they doing this for? Well, when you put that together with what the WHO is trying to do, and you said you're right to say they're trying to do it hopefully by December, but I think that if they can do it earlier, they'll do that. They might try to do it by May of this year, some people suspect. So if they're able to do that, which would essentially be a huge step toward one world governance and using so-called public health as a driver of that one world governance, not public health at all, really, but what they consider public health. If they're able to do that, they'll be able to force people further into the control grid, where these injections will be forced on them. And the companies will make money from the governments who buy them up, and the people will be forced to take them no matter what. And of course, this will come in concert with a declared pandemic, quote unquote. And I think that's what we have to, that's a big thing we have to keep top of mind, is that these companies, and it's not just Moderna, it's all of them, they're going full steam ahead. In China, for example, it was announced on the 20th, last Friday, that Sinopharm, which is one of the big biotech outfits in China, got an okay from the Chinese government to begin clinical trials of its mRNA COVID injection. So this is, as we've discussed many times, a global operation that's going forward with this mRNA. And these entities, the companies, the governments, the those above them who pull their strings, they're not doing this to not have uptake, as it were. And I suspect they're relying on the WHO taking over nation state sovereignty to be able to force these products into people. And it's not just about getting these products into people. It's about using these products as a gateway to digital ID, to central bank digital currency, many things that we could talk about. So I think we have to be super vigilant of that fact that, of course, we should say no. We will say no to these, but they plan on forcing these on us in any way they can. That's what I highly suspect. And there's a lot of evidence to point toward that, just based on what the WHO is trying to do.
Mm. But it's like what's come out of the Davos meetings last week. And there were clips shown on the Saturday of Tony Blair speaking about bringing back the call for digital IDs. Worlds need these digital IDs so they know what their vaccines, their people have had. Well, why do you need to know that? You know, there's no real reason, but of course it's part of his nature to actually bully it in, because the guy is pure evil. You just look at it in his eyes, and there's got this maniacal glee that when he gets excited about something that's going to be so bad for people.
He has the blood of millions of Iraqis on his hands, and definitely, he doesn't flinch, he doesn't care, and he certainly doesn't care about what this technocratic future is going to do to humanity. I think he knows full well, but he doesn't care. And yeah, it was interesting to see him talk about the need for a new digital infrastructure to go along with these injections and to say the quiet part out loud. Wayne, unfortunately, we are out of time once again, but I appreciate you, as always, coming on, sharing your thoughts, sharing your experience of the recent event, and I look forward to speaking again soon, my friend.
Indeed, Jesse. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Absolutely. Take care.